The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. You've got a real treat in store for you this week when I talk with Kevin Scott, the scripter behind Doctor Who the Ninth Doctor, Weapons of Past Destruction, a new miniseries, the first issue of which comes out this Wednesday, April 1st. We talk about the franchise, of course, which is quite the phenomenon, and the book as well as the Ninth Doctor himself, Christopher Eccleston. We also talk about a special resident he has living with him that has to do with Doctor Who. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Kevin Scott, the writer of many good things, including 70 books and audio dramas, and the person you want to ask any Doctor Who question because you've written Whoology, the official Doctor Who miscellany. So how are you doing today?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, it's good.
Good. It's good to talk with you. Now, the reason we're talking today is because you've got a mini-series coming out from Titan Comics about the Ninth Doctor. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came to be?
Yeah, sure. I was working with Titan Comics on some other comics they bring out, mainly Adventure Time, which is a Cartoon Network show. And they produced the Adventure Time comic over here in the UK. So I was working on that. And it was around the time that Titan got the license to do Doctor Who. And so having some history with Doctor Who, I wasted no time in sort of banging doors down until they talked to me about Doctor Who as well. And, you know, chatted to the editor, talked about the things I've done before. And Andrew said to me, which Doctor would you like to write for? And I jumped straight in with, well, the Ninth Doctor, because for me, you know, he's one of the most interesting of recent Doctors. We haven't had so many Ninth Doctor stories out there, so it's obviously an interesting thing to delve into. And it was one of those wonderful moments when you were in the right place talking to the right person at the right time, and it chimed with him and said, well, that's interesting, because we're looking for someone to do a miniseries. And it went from there, really.
Very cool. Now, we talked a little bit before we started to record about the fact that this has been delayed slightly. It's coming out April 1st, and you were saying a little bit about why that happened.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was all ready to go. And Blair Shedd, who's the artist, had produced all his wonderful artwork. We'd gone through it. We'd done all the lettering. We had all sort of the low-res ready to go. And just as it was about to go to print, Blair's computer literally blew up. And it died a complete and horrible death, taking with it all of the art, which was still there, but stored on a hard drive that no one can get to. So with much sweat and tears, Blair, who was in the middle of a massive whiteout storm as well at the same time, it really was Armageddon going on, managed to drag this artwork off of this hard drive, and it was a very slow process, but we got there in the end. But it did mean, unfortunately, we'd missed the slot, and so it had to push back to April the 1st, which over here in the UK, I don't know if you have it in the States, but April the 1st is a day when people play practical jokes on each other, but I can guarantee it's not a practical joke. This time it is coming out on April the 1st, the first issue.
That's good, because April 4th Fool's Day is over here too. We get to do
right. Okay, cool.
It's usually only in the morning. So.
That's right. Yeah, it has to be before midday, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the thing is, most comic stores open about 10 or 12. So
the
fooling will be over with. We'll get to do that now.
Fantastic.
You talked about the Ninth Doctor, and of course, I like Doctor Who. And I have to ask you something, because get your opinion on a couple of things. Who before we proceed into the book is, you know, the Ninth Doctor lasted for a year, and of course, the actor had signed for just for one season, or as you call it, a series over there, and it took off after David Tennant took over later on over here. I mean, it was on Sci-Fi Channel over here and other things like that. And I was just sort of curious as to, you know, you mentioned the fact that the Ninth Doctor is not one of the ones that are as popular, say, as Matt Smith or the current Doctor or things like that. Is it because of the one season, you figure, the one series, that he didn't quite take off with fans?
Well, he has a lot of fans. And one thing we've been amazed at, actually, is the sheer amount of love that's been shown for the Ninth Doctor since this has been announced. I mean, it's taken us, not by surprise, we knew it would be popular, but the sheer amount of interest has been outstanding. But I think the thing was, that series, over here especially, was very important, because Doctor Who in the UK, before 2005, had been treated a little bit like a joke for a long time. You know, the series had finished in the late 80s. There'd been attempts to bring it back. There was the Paul McGann movie. But it had a reputation in the UK and in the UK press for being a bit dodgy and for being, you know, the sets were always wobbly. That's what they always said. Mm-hmm. The monsters look rubbish. Mm-hmm. You know, and the kind of actors that they were naming, who could be the new Doctor when it returned. And I think people thought it would return. Mm-hmm. But they were all very light entertainment figures. They were people, you know, without any sort of real clout, no acting chops, if you like. And then suddenly Christopher Eccleston was announced, and everyone sat up and took notice, because here was a man who was very well respected. You know, he was a guy who appeared in movies. He appeared in some of the best British TV of the 1990s and the early 21st century. And then suddenly he was taking on Doctor Who. So suddenly the press took it seriously. Mm. So over here, there was loads of buzz around the series coming out. And of course, by the time aired, it had been announced that he was leaving after the first series, which again then started to add to the excitement. Mm-hmm. So the machine was starting to run when that series was on telly. By the time David came around and the 10th Doctor appeared, the merchandising machine was in full flow. You know, by that point, Doctor Who was everywhere. And so I think the 9th Doctor missed out on that a bit. But we needed the 9th Doctor, I think. We needed someone like Chris Ferguson. Russ T. Davies has talked about the fact he sort of like kicked the door open and made people take notice. And everything, I think, that's been built on that since David, Matt, and now Peter are building on the fact that someone like Christopher took the role on. So I think he's very important. But, you know, he was only around for a season. So all the merchandising and the tie-ins and the books and the comics and everything that happened sort of happened after his time. So I think there's been a bit of sort of catching up on that. But we are starting to see more Ninth Doctor things out there. So hopefully this will be the first of many as people rediscover him in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. My understanding was that when they had the 50th anniversary, which was a huge event across the world, and they wanted to have Mr. Eccleston come back, but of course he's busy with other projects now. He was in the Thor movie, the second Thor movie, as a villain, and he's been hither and yither. He was on Heroes over here, and so he's been doing a lot of stuff. Did we ever find out why it was he didn't want to come back for that event?
No, and you know, I think from what we can gather, they wanted to make it happen. They were talking, and it couldn't really work. The diaries couldn't mesh. And certainly, I mean, a lot of people seem to think that he has turned his back on Doctor Who and he doesn't want anything to do with it. But when he actually talks about it, he is proud. He says he's proud of what he did on there. But he's one of those actors, he doesn't look back that often. He moves on to new things. And, you know, we've got those 13 episodes of his Doctor Who, which I think are wonderful Doctor Who's as well. But hopefully, through things like the comic we're doing and other things you might see with the Ninth Doctor in the future, the character continues. And hopefully one day we'll see Chris back in the TARDIS. I mean, that would be fantastic. But it's one of those things, when you've got busy actors, it's getting them to return to something is quite difficult at times.
Well, of course, the 50th anniversary brought back Tom Baker, which was you could hear this collective gasp across the world because, you know, we hadn't seen Tom Baker in the Doctor for a long, long time. And that was one of the big things of the 50th anniversary was to have him come back. So maybe they'll do something similar with Mr. Eccleston when the time comes, that there'll be an opportunity for him to come back and it'd be a nice big event like that.
It'd be great, wouldn't it? I watched the 50th anniversary Day of the Doctor at the big Doctor Who celebration that we had in London. We had an anniversary event over the weekend, which I was involved in, and I watched the episode with 2,000 fans in this big auditorium, and I couldn't hear what Tom Baker said because the roar that went up, as soon as people realised who it was, the roar that went up and the applause meant that I completely lost the first lines of the curator or whatever we're calling him. So I had to go back and watch it on catch up to actually hear what the Doctor was saying there. But yeah, the excitement there of seeing a very old, very much loved face back. And yeah, who knows? Who knows? One day when we least expect it, the Ninth Doctor might pop up.
I remember watching the 50th anniversary, and I was by myself, but I remember when the voice came across the television, my jaw dropped open, because knowing that he had not been in Doctor Who for so long was just, what a wonderful thing. That was a great exclamation point to that whole episode. That was terrific, so it was good. Now, getting back to the Ninth Doctor, my understanding is that this is a mini-series, but the other Doctors all have ongoings. Was there a reason for that?
I think the reason is that Titan doesn't want to completely swamp the market. I mean, you know, we've got three ongoings now with the 10th, 11th and 12th Doctor, and they're doing really well. In effect, they could have an ongoing series for every Doctor, but, that would break people's budgets and break people's bank balances. So they want to keep the excitement going. So the plan is that you have the three main ongoings, and then you have this fourth stream of publications that go on rotation. So we've got the Ninth Doctor first for the 5-issue miniseries. Then there's Paul Cornell's event that's happening. And then there's going to be another miniseries with another past Doctor. And it's a way of bringing in the past Doctors as well. And for a lot of people, especially in the American market, perhaps they're not aware so much of the past Doctors. As you said, it's only really during the 10th and 11th Doctor's time that the show really took off on mainstream in the US. It's been a cult favourite for a long time since the days of Tom Baker, but some of the older Doctors perhaps aren't so familiar for the sort of the average person who walk into a comic store. So it's a good chance to sort of test the waters with them. You know, I'm hoping that we might see more Ninth Doctor comics, of course I am, but at the minute, you know, it's a case of sort of dipping into the past every now and then. But yeah, for the time being, for the Ninth, we put everything into this 5 issues.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's interesting because it's not only in the U.S. that Doctor Who has taken off. It's around the world because I saw the special which Peter and Jenna and all these people went around the world. And you see huge crowds wherever they went in order to launch the new Doctor. And I'm just kind of fascinated about that because, you know, Doctor Who was originally a British show for children. What was it that made it just explode like this? Was it David? Was it, you know, was it the storytelling? What, you know, what happened that made Doctor Who such a worldwide phenomenon?
I think it's a lot of it. People talk about the Britishness of Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. I think that's got a lot to do with it. You've got a lead character who isn't a big superhero type, who is fallible, yes, but is obviously also a genius, but isn't a big muscular sort of gun-toting hero, does things slightly differently, very differently when you get to some of the Doctors. I think that has an appeal there. I mean, Doctor Who before, what some people call the classic series, you know, it sold to a lot of territories. And so it's always been popular right from the beginning. I mean, in the early 60s, they were selling it around the world, maybe not to the level they are now, but it always chimed with people. And I think it's the format. Again, some people say about Doctor Who is that it is a format that can go anywhere and do anything because of the nature of time travel and the TARDIS and everything involved in it. So you know that actually if you watch Doctor Who one week and it's not a story that you particularly interests you, well, you might be in a different situation next week. And so that flexibility appeals to people as well. But I think, yeah, it had a massive amount to do with the Doctors and also with the companions, with the assistants and the sort of family they put into Doctor Who. When Russell T. Davies brought the Doctor back in 2005, he introduced family to Doctor Who, which is something that never really happened. The Doctor always took people away from Earth and took them away from their lives, and they went out on adventures on their own. Through Rose and her family and then Martha and all the companions, they had lives. And what's been important, I think, in 21st century Doctor Who is that family life and that wider community of characters have been a part of it. And I think that's changed with people as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got Rose and you've got Captain Jack in with this. This is where Captain Jack first appeared, was with the Ninth Doctor. And so you're bringing these characters in. And, of course, Rose is a beloved character. She was a companion for both Christopher and for David. And the fact that he's the last Time Lord was brought into the notion, which changed some of it a bit. It made him more of a desolate character. And you could kind of understand why he was looking for people to be with. I always wondered why he didn't have more Time Lord companions, because they could understand all this stuff that was going on. And so you're bringing Rose and Captain Jack in. Was that gratifying? Because, you know, Captain Jack, he's pretty popular, especially
over absolutely. Here. Yeah, and, you know, and obviously with Torchwood, which followed on and spun off of Doctor Who, incredibly popular character, a very different character to the Captain Jack we saw in Doctor Who, because, I mean, this is right at the beginning. I mean, we're saying that this story literally carries on from his introduction in The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances. So this is Jack's first appearance as a companion, really. I know it's his first story out there in space, in the TARDIS. So he's a very different man. He's still a bit of a cocky con man at heart. He is definitely the same flirtatious Jack that we know and love, but he hasn't been weighed down by all the things that happened to him following Parting of the Ways and following his immortality and Torchwood and the terrible things he has to do when he is in charge of Torchwood. Mm-hmm. So it's a much younger character. And I love Torchwood and I love how the character progressed. And I thought it was great to see that sort of arc. But it's quite nice to go way back to the beginning and remember what he was like when he first appeared. And also the fact that we didn't really see the three of them together that much. We see them in Boomtown, which is one of the later episodes of that first series, and they're a unit suddenly. Mm-hmm. When we'd last seen them, they were just picking Jack up. Suddenly, they're back on Earth in Cardiff, Wales, meeting Mickey, Rose's ex, and they're a team. They're very smart about it. They're showing off. They work well together. They've had all these adventures. So it seemed a really good opportunity to start telling some of those adventures and sort of how they got there.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, the story that you're writing is called, and I love witty titles, Weapons of Past Destruction.
Yes.
I love that. Now, can you give us like a TV guide description of what the story is?
Well, in the first issue, the Doctor, Rose and Jack find themselves in the middle of a battle between two armoured races. There's obviously a war going on and they get caught right slap bang into the middle when the Doctor's taken them to visit one of his favourite planets and has arrived to find it completely destroyed. Yeah. The sort of origins of the story came from something that I've been thinking about ever since the show came back. And if we were to believe that the Time Lords were gone and Gallifrey was gone and there was no one monitoring time, There's quite a few mentions in that first season about, you know, if my people were here, this wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And there's the episode Father's Day where a church gets sort of shut off from time because there's a paradox. Mm-hmm. And the Doctor literally says then, if the Time Lords were around, they would sort this out. So I have to do it. So it's always got me thinking, well, nature abhors a vacuum. Someone would try and fill those shoes. You know, someone would go, well, there are no Time Lords monitoring this. Therefore, we can take over time. Or we can be the ones to monitor time. We can police time. And you would have a sort of power struggle at the top. And originally, the working title, when I first scribbled it down in my notebook, was Power Play, which was the sort of when I started to put the ideas together. And the weapons title came a bit later on when we were discussing it. And yeah, that's where the origins come from. The Time Lords have gone, Gallifrey's gone, but that means there's still a lot of people out there who can use time. So are they using it for good or for ill? And is anyone setting themselves up as the new Time Lords? And what would the Doctor say when he meets them?
Because, of course, we hope for this purpose of the story that they're doing things for ill, so the Doctor has to go in and fix it.
So. Well, you think so, wouldn't you? Or perhaps the Doctor ends up doing things that are bad himself. We don't know. That's the joy of it.
See, that's the wonderful thing about the Ninth Doctor, was that he was kind of a shade of gray we hadn't seen before. Because like Matt Smith came, you know, the Geronimo and all that stuff, go in there and fix things kind of guy. But the Ninth Doctor was kind of somebody who, you know, he wore a leather jacket, which we hadn't seen before. He wasn't necessarily interested in going around and fixing everything. He would get pulled into it. The one thing I didn't like about David Tennant was he was forever being pulled in, kicking and screaming into solving things. But Christopher Eccleston's Doctor was a very different guy than we were used to. And on some senses, that was good for us, because those of us who had seen the past ones got something new out of him. And it sounds like you're carrying that tradition on with the Ninth Doctor, as far as, you know, making him something a little different from the other Doctors.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Ninth Doctor is damaged goods. He's been through this war, and we now know, with hindsight, since the introduction of the War Doctor, exactly what happened. But, of course, the Doctor doesn't know that. And the Doctor thinks that he killed everyone. I mean, there's that wonderful scene in Dalek, when he first meets a Dalek after the war, and he first reveals that, you know, he burned everyone. He destroyed both sides of the battle, including his own people. So there's all that anger and regret, which would later come out in the 10th Doctor in a completely different way, mm-hmm. a brooding way. Mm-hmm. With the 9th Doctor, I always got the idea that he's trying to remember how to be the Doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been through these dreadful things. And when he first meets Rose, he is trying to fix things. You know, he's trying to sort out what's happening on Earth. Mm-hmm. And he knows it's a legacy of the Time War. He knows there's things still out there that are wrong because of it. And he meets Rose. Why Rose is such an important character is that she sort of reminds him why he did what he used to do. He suddenly sees someone he can show the universe to, which he'd sort of stopped doing because he'd seen everything he thought he needed to see because he'd seen some terrible things. So while the Doctor is quite angry at times, the 9th Doctor, there's also a lot of hope in him. Because, you know, sometimes I think he overcompensates, and you see some of the episodes and he's saying the silliest jokes and he's got that daft grin he's got, which is wonderful. And he's going a bit too far. And I think especially in that first episode, when he's mucking around with the hand and everything, he's sort of play-acting. He's almost play-acting what he thinks the Doctor should be. And through his relationship with Rose, and then I think with Jack as well, he starts to really remember what it was like to be the hero he was. And I think him and Jack get on exceptionally well because there's a bit of kindred spirit there. And again, by the time you get to Boomtown and the end of the series, they're working as a unit and the Doctor almost seems healed. Mm-hmm. And then just as that happens, he dies and comes back as someone else. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the tragedy. Mm-hmm. But again, when he dies and when the 9th Doctor regenerates into the 10th, there's a real sense of hope there. His last speech, there's no regret. Mm-hmm. He's looking forward to the future, mm-hmm. whatever that may hold. So, yeah, I think the 9th Doctor is a fascinating character. For just 13 episodes, we saw a lot of character mm-hmm. in those 13 hours of TV.
Now, are you incorporating a lot of this into your miniseries about the things that you're talking about what makes the 9th Doctor unique? Do you bring a lot of that to bear in your writing in those 5 issues?
Well, yeah, I try to as much as possible. And you've only got 5 issues. You can't put everything into it. But there are moments when I try and touch on all of those points. You know, there will be moments when you see the Doctor's anger flash. You know, in the first issue especially, I try and show the fact that he's enjoying himself and he's having fun. That changes as things become a little bit more desperate later on. But yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll touch on all those moments. What we're trying to do is make sure there's something in you know, one of the issues at some point that sort of touches on all those different parts of the 9th Doctor, which is quite a task in one story. And there'll be some elements that perhaps, you know, we haven't got time to spend a lot of time on, but we try and touch on most of them.
Well, a lot of the Doctor stories that are in Titan Comics tend to be 5-issue arcs. So as far as this goes, this could be the beginning of an ongoing, you know, as things go, because you're following the pattern of the other books doing a 5-issue arc. So my hope is that it will go over so well that it will turn into an ongoing and you'll get to do that on a regular basis, which would be fun.
Well, I definitely hope so. I mean, I'd love that, obviously. Because I'm that kind of writer, I'm seeding in a few things that might be able to be picked up later because it's just what I do. If anyone's listened to any of the Doctor Who audio plays I've written, I've sort of seeded things in there. When I used to work with a guy called Mark Wright, we used to write together, and we were always seeding stuff in that we'd be able to pick up later. Whether we did or not is another thing. But again, with this 9th Doctor series, there's a couple of things that, as we've been doing it, there was only a point yesterday when I was talking to Blair and the editor, Andrew, and I went, oh, you know, this is something that we could return to one day. So yeah, I've always got half a mind to it. As I'd love it to happen. Or if it's another miniseries down the line, you know, there's plenty more stories to tell with the 9th Doctor.
Well, it just goes to show, you know, the Doctor is an eternal character. You know, he can come back as often as he wants, and every Doctor handles things differently, and that makes things fun to read. And also the science fiction aspect of it. You know, we have lost a lot of science fiction as far as things go. It tends to be not science fiction in the sense that there's danger involved and stuff like that. Star Trek kind of changed things in that way. But as far as the Doctor goes, what you're doing is giving us more sci-fi, science fiction type stories that we can enjoy. And I think that that's something that we sorely lack in the decades since the beginning of the Doctor. And so I'm glad you guys are doing that.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's the interesting thing about Doctor Who. You can have some stories that are proper hard science fiction, and then you can have other stories which are science fantasy. And I think the Doctor spans both those worlds. I mean, the TARDIS, at the end of the day, is apparently based on science, but it is a very magical thing, you know. So it depends. This is a debate I have regularly with a lot of the other Doctor Who writers, you know, how fantasy is Doctor Who? And I think it can be both. I think at the heart you've got a story, you know, about a wizard in a box, but, you know, through that you can tell lots of different stories, and sometimes the wizard relies on science more than others. But, you know, hopefully we're getting the balance right at the minute at Titan.
Now I gotta ask, is the Ninth Doctor your favorite Doctor, or is that someone else?
Oh, God, this is such a tough question. I mean, obviously, it's the Doctor you grow up with, isn't it? And, you know, mm-hmm. for me, that was Tom. In the late 70s, when I started watching Doctor Who, Tom was the Doctor, wasn't it? You know, and I'd never seen another Doctor Who at that point. So, yeah, he's always my Doctor. But then, you know, it's one of those things that I love the fact that Doctor changes over time. So then when I was perhaps becoming more interested in Doctor Who fandom and sort of the wider world of Doctor Who in the 80s, that's when we had Peter Davison, Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy. So mm-hmm. each of them has a special moment for me, really. But, yeah, Tom's my Doctor, I suppose.
Well, you know, he was the most popular one over here. He went on to public broadcasting stations, and that was the one we saw most. Most stations couldn't afford to buy the whole thing, so they bought Tom Baker's stuff. Mm. And that's where a lot of us were exposed to it first. I have to say, though, that for me, my Doctor is Matt Smith.
Right.
I watched a lot of it, and it didn't resonate with me quite the way that Matt Smith did. I liked the whole Geronimo, let's go in there and fix things. And so to me, I kind of miss him at this point. I'm kind of back down to where I was before Matt Smith came along. And I like Peter Capaldi real well, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see moving forward, because apparently the ratings are higher than ever over here in the States.
Yeah. So, you know, that just shows the strength of the format, I suppose. And when you've got a lead character who can change so much mm-hmm. and still remain the same, mm-hmm. it's phenomenal, really. I mean, when they originally came up with that idea in the 60s when William Hartnell left, mm-hmm. I think Doctor Who's success is testament to the, you know, Patrick Troughton era, because mm-hmm. if Patrick Troughton hadn't come in as the second Doctor and sold it completely, mm-hmm. you know, we wouldn't have Doctor Who now. You know, the fact that we just accept that there's a new Doctor mm-hmm. and we accept that he changes and we accept that he can be a completely different man, but the same man at the same time, mm-hmm. or perhaps one day woman, we don't know. Mm-hmm. That's all to do with Patrick Troughton, I think, and the team working at the time, that they completely sold that concept, and it still works today.
And that's something. It's a great one, something creative, and it doesn't, you know, you don't expect that. I saw this little movie that they made about the creation of Doctor Who, and it was interesting because nobody expected it to be anything. They assigned it to the lower level people, they thought, and that was kind of, it was just going to come and go in a hurry, and instead it turned to this phenomenon, which is just something so great about that. Well, Doctor Who, the Ninth Doctor, Weapons of Past Destruction, comes on April 1st, and that's the first of a 5-issue miniseries, which is where I'm looking forward to, and I encourage people, even if you don't know who the Ninth Doctor is, this is a great way to be introduced to him. So I would say give it a go, as well as the other Doctors, and picked all those up. I think Titan Comics is doing a wonderful job on the Doctors. He's just great. Now, as far as other stuff, as the author of many books and audio dramas, what else are you working on that we should be aware of?
What am I working on at the minute that I can talk about? That's half the problem when you're working on stuff that you can't really talk about.
Right.
Yet. I'm working on another audio series for Big Finish Productions based on the Pathfinder role-playing games. Ooh. That's literally what I'm working on today. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you which ones or you know, whatever, but it's a new series that's coming. So yeah, more stuff, more audio stuff from Blake Seven, some more comics on the way. But unfortunately, yes, one of those things that I'm working on stuff that I can't actually mention. The only thing that's been announced, I think, is that I'm writing for Titan again, but for Titan Books, a couple of Sherlock Holmes novels, which have, well, they're not science fiction or sort of genre. Really, there are elements in there that people who like genre might find it interesting. So it's very traditional pastiche Sherlock Holmes, Victoriana, but I'm bringing in elements from other genre novels that might be interesting. So that's probably my next big job after I finish this series of audios.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a wonderful website, kevinscott.com, and there's something in there, the last question I've got for you has to do with, the very first thing in your description of yourself is, you live near Bristol with your wife and two daughters, but then you have another resident that lives with you.
Yes, my inflatable Dalek, which I had for many years, and when my wife then girlfriend moved in with me. I had to sort of introduce her to Desmond, who is the Dalek, and she had to accept that that was inhabitant of the flat that we lived in. Then this makes me sound mad, doesn't it? But I was working on children's magazines at the time, and someone knew my love of Doctor Who, and so sent me this wonderful thing. He's about 4 or 5 foot tall or something, and he's one of the Daleks from the 1960s Peter Cushing Dalek movies.
Oh, wow.
And he's great. He's had a few slow punches in his time as well, because people have had a habit of rugby tackling him and all kinds of things, but he survives, and he survived my children now, and he's still there. So yes, he's still part of the family. Sometimes we've even decorated him at Christmas. He's had tinsel draped over him the lot, so the poor thing. He's quite a friendly Dalek, so that's okay.
How did he get the name Desmond? I have to ask that.
It's just alliteration. I like alliteration. If you've read any of my children's books, you know I play with alliteration quite a lot. So Desmond the Dalek just worked, didn't it? It stuck since then.
Well, Kevin, it was great talking with you, and much success as you go forward with these good things. And I hope that the Ninth Doctor miniseries really takes off, and we get to see a whole lot more of him from your pen. I think that would be wonderful.
Thank you very much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.